as a wedding photographer, as family photographers, the goal is to make memories. But for essentially a brand photographer, our goal is to get our customers a return on their investment. And so I'm looking at those images through the lens of marketing, being like, is this image going to serve that purpose? Is this image going to help them sell their wine? And if the answer is no, then I'm like, okay, but is it going to endear them to their audience? And if the answer to that question is no, then I'm like, okay, is this unique to this brand? And if that question is no, then I finally throw it out.
Hey, welcome to the Beginner Photography Podcast, brought to you by CloudSpot, the easiest way to deliver and even sell your photos online. I'm your host, Raymond Hatfield, and each week I interview one of the world's most interesting photographers to learn what it really takes to capture beautiful images and compelling stories so that you can start to do the same. Today, we have an episode from the BPP Vault where we revisit our treasure trove of interviews to offer both new and longtime listeners a chance to uncover the powerful lessons and practical tips to enhance your photography skills. So whether you are listening with fresh ears or a new perspective, remember, there's always something new to learn. In today's interview, we are chatting with winery branding photographer Heather Danitz about communicating value through story. Heather has a unique niche specializing in photographing branding materials for wineries. Having grown up less than an hour from Napa, which is one of the, you know, several hubs for wine in California, I can tell you that there is this energy coming from the vines when the fog rolls in from the ocean in the early morning. What I loved about what Heather is going to share with you is that she took two things that she loved, wine production, which she already knew a good amount about, and photography, and then she merged them into one amazing venture. In this interview, listen to Heather's excitement, pay attention to how she approaches storytelling in her images, and how she adapts when things don't necessarily go according to plan. And of course, stick around to the end where I'm going to share my three biggest takeaways to help you take what you learn from these interviews and turn it into action so that you can, you know, apply these lessons to your own photography. So with that, let's go ahead and get on into today's interview. Heather, my first question for you is, when did you know that photography was going to play an important role in your life?
Yeah. So I don't know if I ever had like a hard time that I can really point to. My dad was really into photography just as a hobbyist. He had, you know, he won a couple of awards in college, that kind of thing. And so there were always cameras around. And my family would always bring out the, you know, the old disposable cameras and made sure that each of my siblings, you know, my sister and myself and my stepsister, we each had our own little disposable camera. And we used to have these old, they're sort of like Polaroids, but they're like thin. I don't even know what they were called, but they're toy type things. And so, you know, my sisters would go take photos of just whatever, you know, the cat, whatever. And I would take photos of things that interested me and would try and get really artsy with them. And my dad was like, oh, that's interesting. Let's give her a digital camera and see what she does with that. And so, you know, he had, I don't know, this was like a million years ago. So a Canon, whatever, 40D or something, or 50D, okay. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. It was a long time ago. So he had this camera and I would go out and he would hand it over to me. We'd go like kayaking or something, and I would take photos of everything and birds and boats and things. And it was just really fun. And so when I got into high school, we had to do a project, a senior project. And I chose to do photography as my senior project. So we had to do the physical aspect of it. So we had to be, we had to intern for someone. And so my dad had a photographer friend who was a commercial photographer, product photographer, and he let me come in and use his studio space to take photos of my friends and to just do whatever I felt like, you know, think whatever I wanted to learn about and do. And he would guide me through the process. And then my paper was on how photography affects society. And that was a really fascinating introduction into photography and diving deep into it and taking it a little bit more seriously. So I got into when I got into college, the early days of college, I wanted to be a photojournalist. Like basically the idea was I wanted to work for a fashion magazine, but like do more hard hitting topics. I don't know. Like I wanted to be a mix of Annie Leibovitz and then Kate Hudson's character from How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. Like I wanted to work for I wanted to work for Vanity Fair. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, all right, we're going to do this, and went to, you know, JC and did, you know, the usual intro to photography classes, like was in the dark room for the first semester and then did digital photography for the second semester and kind of got into it. And I was like, yeah, this is great, but I don't know. I don't know if this is what I want to do as a profession anymore. And then that's kind of how I got into the wine industry, is sort of from there, as I took like a hard left turn and got into science.
So I want to know, when you're in high school, I remember those days. I remember coming up with our senior project. What was it, again, about photography that made you think, like, I'm going to choose photography over literally anything else? I think that it was a pretty open-ended, idea. You can write about whatever you wanted to. What was it about photography that you thought, I'm going to explore this a little deeper than just taking snapshots of family and friends?
I don't really know. I don't have a good answer for that at all.
I just felt it.
Yeah. I was like, this is interesting. And, I had originally, I think at one point thought about doing some sort of like fashion sort of project. So, I was taking like a fashion design class at the time as well. And so I had thought about doing that, but then I was like, I don't know if I want to do that as a project. And I was like, okay, well, what goes with fashion? Like, oh, you have to have photos of fashion. So I suppose if I had to answer the question, I think that would probably be it, is that I was just looking for a way to match it with fashion in some way. And that was really what led me into this sort of photojournalistic style, was wanting to capture people being themselves, just doing what they do when I'm not around, with my camera pointing in their faces. So
yeah,
I suppose that's the answer.
So come time to go to junior college, you're taking these classes. Yeah. At some point you decide, nope, this isn't for me. Mm-hmm. Was it something technical? What was it that made you change career paths out of photography?
Yeah. So I grew up in Los Angeles. And so I was going to a junior college in the LA County area, and people in LA, artists in LA, are incredibly competitive in a way that felt really toxic to me. And, you know, we would take our work into our group classes and my classmates would tear my work apart, and it wasn't constructive. Like some of it was constructive feedback, right? But some of it was just like them, you know, just shitting on my work. And I was like, I don't like this. You know, I'm very much a collaborative person. And I, you know, on the Enneagram, I'm the enthusiast, I'm a 7. And so I just like to support people and I like to be excited about things. And so when people aren't sort of reciprocating that, it feels toxic and wrong. And it just didn't feel good. You know, it doesn't feel good to have somebody kind of pick apart your work with art being so subjective. It's just didn't feel good. Right. And so I wanted to enter into an industry that was a little bit more collaborative, that felt a little bit more community driven. Mm-hmm. and wine fit the bill perfectly.
So you decide to go into wine.
Yeah.
You're doing that for a few months, a number of years before you decide to pick up the camera again. What was that transition like?
Yeah, it was about 10 years. So I started studying wine in 2008, late 2008 and early 2009, and ended up getting my degree from Oregon State University in viticulture and enology, which is the science of grape growing and winemaking. And I had worked several years in the wine industry at that point. So I had worked for a tasting room. I had worked in vineyards. I'd worked in cellars. And when I got my degree, the intention was to become a vineyard manager. So naturally, I went and started looking for jobs working for a vineyard management company and got hired at a local one here in the Santa Ynez Valley. And when I was working for them, they're like, hey, yeah, in between all of your other duties, because I was working for like three different departments for this company. It's a huge vineyard management company. They manage, I think, about 80 vineyards in the Santa Ynez Valley. Yeah, it's a lot. Big and small. And so I was doing a little bit of everything. I was working in grape sales. I was working with the pest management department. I was working with the vit tech department. So I would go out and download weather station data and compile that into reports. And then I was also doing compliance. And so I was doing a little bit of everything. And they're like, hey, yeah, Heather, in between all of your other duties, could you start a social media account for us? And I was like, yeah, why not? That sounds like a lot of fun. You know, sounds something new and different, whatever. And I thought, and I was like, okay, well, what's the purpose? Like, what's the point of having a social media account? And they're like, well, nobody knows what a vineyard management company does. And we want to share that with the world. And so I was like, okay, well, how best can I accomplish that? Oh, with Instagram. That seems the most logical social media platform for this purpose. And so I was like, well, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it right. So I picked up my old camera, dusted it off. It was, you know, I think at this point I was on the Canon 60D or something, this old thing with a little stock lens on it. And I would take it out with me on my rounds. And I'd start photographing the vines at their various stage of development. I would photograph the farm workers doing the amazing hard work that they do every single day. And I would photograph just whatever was going on. I'd photograph the hawks, the nature that was happening in the vineyard. And I would talk about it, whatever, you know, I'd put those photos up on Instagram and I would tell people what was going on, like what, give them context for it. And we started growing pretty quickly and people started getting interested in what I was doing. My supervisor came to me one day and he's like, you know, people are noticing us now. And he's like, people are complimenting the social media and they're loving the photos and so, you know, people want to work with you. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. Like I didn't ever think of that as a career, you know, in the wine industry. And eventually I started, you know, this was 2017 that I started working for them. So in 2018, I had a friend, you know, having worked in the wine industry, you make friends with winemakers. And one of my winemaker friends came to me and she's like, hey, I'm having an article written about me by this wine blogger. I don't have any photos to use for that. And I know, you know, she's like, you have a camera. Could you take, you know, that whole line where your friend's like, you have a camera. Can you please take some photos of me? Yeah. And I was like, yeah, that sounds great. You know, what would be better than hanging out with one of my really good friends, you know, one of my most awesome, talented friends and take photos of her. And I'm like, great, let's do it. And so got into the winery, took some photos for her, had a whole bunch of fun doing it, and then sent those photos off to this wine blogger. And he came back to me and he was like, these photos are awesome. I'm doing all these articles for these other local winemakers. Can you also photograph them? And I was like, yeah, totally. You know, at this point I was just learning and I was just having a good time doing it. So I wasn't charging anybody. I was just like doing it for fun. I also had a non-compete clause with the company I was working for. Yeah. So there was that. There's the legal aspect of it as well. And so I started photographing for my friends and for all these awesome winemakers and people started noticing. And eventually I went to my supervisor I went to the HR department. I also went to, the CFO of the company who was my mentor. And I was like, hey, I'm having a lot of fun doing this. I would love to make this a side hustle? How can we make this work so it doesn't, you know, it doesn't violate this non-compete clause that we have? And they're like, okay, well, I think, you know, since your job title is technically in-house photographer, maybe what we can have you do is like have it be like a consulting thing. So they would pay, the winemakers would pay us, and then we would pay you. So basically it was sort of like a roundabout way of doing that. And that was, yeah, towards the end of 2018. And I was like, yeah, okay. You know, it sounds complicated, but yeah, like anything to keep doing what I want to do. And then like a month or so later, my mentor came to me again. She's the CFO of that company. And she was like, hey, listen, you've got something here. This is a really cool thing that you're doing. And I don't want you to feel stopped by this company. Like, I don't want you to feel stifled by it. You could do some really cool stuff. And I was like, you know what? Yeah, I can do some really cool stuff. And so I had that opportunity to leave the vineyard management company and start my own business. And so that's exactly what I did. And started Craft and Cluster in February of 2019. So it was a pretty short period between being like, I want to do this as a side hustle to like, no, we're going whole hog on it and starting a business. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. That has got to be terrifying as somebody who didn't go to school for business, you know, didn't even go to school for photography, just like, well, I guess, you know, in junior college, but it's like you already were in this path of, you know, in the wine industry of helping and doing marketing for wineries. And now you have to do this entirely new thing. And that has got to feel like really good. Right. Mm-hmm. And one of the questions that I think about often is that there's kind of two schools of thought. It's like you either become the jack of all trades so that you don't get burnt out, or you niche down and become known for that thing. And to me, it sounds like niching down for you was a very natural progression because that's where you already were. Can you talk a little bit more about that, about niching down to is it to become the person, or is it, I don't know, because you just don't like taking pictures of your family and dog or whatever.
Yeah. So, you know, I think as a lot of photographers do when they first start out, you know, I was afraid. I was like, is this, you know, I knew like it had been tested. So I knew that I could make money photographing winemakers at least. Right. And I knew I could make money photographing vineyard companies, but it was the early days. And I was like, I will photograph anyone who will pay me, you know, those first couple of months. And so those first couple of months I did, you know, I did headshots for lawyers. I did, you know, I did some family sessions. I photographed a couple of weddings as a second photographer. Wow. And, just did it all. Yeah. And I found that I wasn't happy doing all those things. And I found that I wasn't growing as quickly as I wanted to. I knew I had the potential to do something really cool here. And I was just like, I felt like I was frittering it away by doing all the everything, you know? And so I had to make that hard decision is about, you know, say like 3 or 4 months into this business. I had to make that really hard decision and say, nope, we're just working with wineries. I occasionally will do some family photos and things like that, but only for very specific people. And they're usually people who work in the wine industry. So it's sort of like still within it. And so I found that it was much easier to market myself by posting photos of vineyards and wineries. And so those first few months, it was me posting like the same, you know, photos from like the same 4 sessions that I had done back when I was working for the vineyard management company. Right. And it was a lot of me like driving around Santa Barbara County and just like stopping outside of vineyards and photographing vineyards and posting those photos and then reaching out to winemakers and being like, hi, hello. Do you have a wine writer that's writing an article about you? How long has it been since you've updated your headshot? You know, and most of them are like, oh yeah, it's been six, it's been 6 years since like I look like a little baby face. So like maybe we should update to my more rugged appearance. And so it was a lot of kind of legwork doing that. And I found it was so much easier. And I think that's what people need to know when they're getting into photography, right? Is it's going to be tempting to be like, anyone who will hire me, anyone who will pay me money, I will photograph you. But it's so much easier to find the thing that you love. And sometimes, I mean, I was fortunate in that I already had tested this and I knew that I loved photographing wineries and winemakers and vineyard people, but sometimes it does take being, you know, a jack of all trades to hone in on the one thing that you really, really enjoy. And so I think if anybody is like not really sure what that one thing is, I would encourage them to go look in any photos that they've saved on Instagram or Pinterest or any, or even the photos that they're maybe posting on their own social media platforms for fun, and try and find the things that are popping up most often. And it's like, if you're photographing babies a bunch, or if you're saving a bunch of baby photos, maybe you're a newborn photographer, right? If you're saving a bunch of photos from other wine or other wedding photographers or elopement photographers or something, then maybe that's your niche, you know? And maybe if you find yourself photographing a lot of products, even you're like, man, I love photographing shoes, or like, I love photographing lifestyle or people running or fitness or whatever, then maybe those are the things that you should be niching down to. And once you do that, you can get really, really clear on who you're trying to serve, who you're trying to help. And it just makes it so much easier for you to market yourself. And soon enough, the floodgates will open and all these people will start taking notice of you. So.
What does it say if the only photos that you save on Instagram are photos of nachos and rally cars? Who do I market myself to then?
Yeah, maybe you're more into the rally car photo game, because I think that's a niche as well, right?
Yes, very much so.
Yes.
Very much so.
Yeah.
I want to know, do you consider yourself a commercial photographer for wineries, or is there something else that you would call yourself? Hey, Raymond here. If you're sometimes baffled by which camera settings to use, then I've got just the thing for you. My free guide, Picture Perfect Camera Settings. It's a fantastic starting point for anybody eager to understand the basics of camera settings in various shooting scenarios. And it's tailored to beginners who want to get out of auto mode, providing clear, easy-to-follow suggestions on where to start with your settings. So whether you're capturing a stunning landscape or a family portrait, Picture Perfect Camera Settings will help you to get off of automatic mode and explore the possibilities your camera offers. Remember, mastering photography settings is a journey, and this guide is your first step and the perfect resource to guide you towards finding the right settings for your style. So grab your copy today at perfectcamerasettings.com and start your journey to better photos.
I don't really identify with the commercial photography. Like, every time I see that, I'm like, it sounds so like stuffy and bland. The way that I describe my work is photojournalistic. I guess editorial might be the way that people describe it, right?
Okay.
I photograph wineries, winemakers doing what they would be doing if I wasn't there. Mm-hmm. So I'm capturing the real life situations. I'm a storyteller. I'm telling their story, doing my best to get in there and show how these wineries get their wine from grape to glass. And, you know, so that's, yeah, it's, I would just, that's my style.
That perfectly answers the question. And actually, my next question for you was going to be about the storytelling, because I know that that's very important to you. On your website, it says that you do storytelling for wineries. And I tried to think about that. And I was like, well, I shoot weddings. I go to weddings. There's a very clear beginning, middle, and an end to a wedding. And that's like the basic story structure. And what does that look like for wineries? What does a beginning, middle, and end look like for a winery? But I think you just said from grape to glass. But is this something that, like, you photograph all that in one day? Is this a longer project? How does that work?
Yeah, it is a longer project. So the life cycle of a grape starts in right now, actually. And, you know, it's early March that we're recording this. So the lifestyle of the grape starts in the ground with the soil. The vines are about to start. We call it bud breaks, when the buds break out of, or the leaves and clusters and everything break out of the buds that they've been sleeping in for the last couple of months. So right now it's looking like I'm out in the vineyard, photographing pruning. We're finishing up pruning right now. So I'm photographing winter pruning. I'm photographing there's lots of sheep and goats and chickens out in the vineyards right now too, grazing the cover crops. And so it's a lot of that sort of quiet time out in the vineyard. And then once we move past that, it's, you know, we're watching the vineyard grow. We're watching everything establish itself. And eventually in end of July, early August, the grapes are going to start turning color. And so I'm going to start photographing that and talking about that and sharing that story. And, you know, and all all the vineyard practices that the our amazing vineyard workers are doing every single day. And then we get into my busy season, which I think probably correlates a little bit with wedding busy season, basically from late August or like mid August in the Santa Barbara County. It's about mid August to early November is harvest season. And so that's when we're picking the grapes, and that's when I get the most action, and when I could potentially follow a grape to the winery. And I have done that. So last year I worked with a winery that was like, we want you here all day. We want you to capture everything. And so I started in the vineyard at, you know, 5:30 in the morning. It was still dark outside. I was photographing the vineyard crews picking and harvesting the grapes. And then I followed these bins of grapes to the, what we call the crush pad, which is where the production facility, where they will destem the grapes, put them into open top fermenters. And then from there, I went into the cellar itself and photographed the cellar crews doing their daily rounds. And so they do things like punch downs, they do, and pump overs, which are ways to mix the fermenting juice with the berries. I'm trying to like describe this in the most simple way possible. And so I was able to photograph that. And then, you know, we went into the cellar and did some like barrel samples with the winemaker. And so we were able to see some wine that was already finished. It was just aging in barrel. And then from there we went into the tasting room, and I photographed guests enjoying the wine in the glass and things like that. So that was the perfect example of literally going from grape to glass and capturing that story. And so then the vines go dormant and we're back at it, and we get to start a whole new year again.
Right. Yeah. So then, I want to know more about that process for, I guess what I want to know is when you show up, right? Let's step back even further. When a winery contacts you or reaches out to you and they say, yes, we want you to shoot for us. Yes. What's that next step? Is it some sort of planning process on what their story is and what photos need to be captured?
Yes. Yeah. So I always start off with one, what is the purpose? Like, what are you after right now? If they're reaching out to me right now, they're probably looking for more lifestyle type sessions. This is tends to be when I do less in the winery and vineyard and more in the tasting room, or, you know, in someone's home photographing, you know, wine and food together. And so they'll reach out to me and say, hey, yeah, we're looking for this type of session, or like, we're looking to convey this. These images are going to be used for our upcoming wine club shipment. And so we want to share those also on social media, and we want to, you know, the goal. And so I'm always asking, because I'm both a marketer and a photographer, my goal is always to ask the client, like, what do you want? How can these images facilitate your business goals? So what mm-hmm. are your business goals? Mm-hmm. And they'll say, yeah, we're trying to serve our wine club members, we want to sell more bottles, or we're trying to create more brand awareness. We're trying to tell people our story. And so whenever they tell me one of those three questions, I'm like, okay, so then the next step would be to be like, okay, well, what are you envisioning? Like, when you, what triggered you to reach out to me versus someone else? And they'll be like, oh, we love this aspect of your work. You know, oh, we love seeing, you know, what I call the bottles in the wild. So these are wine bottles that are out in the world being enjoyed in a more lifestyle type setting. I'm like, okay, yeah. Great. Cool. So that's what you're after. So you're wanting to serve your wine club members, and you're wanting to show off more lifestyle stuff. Great. Okay. So then the next step would be like, all right, so are you wanting to show smiling faces, enjoying wine, laughing and socializing? Are you wanting to show food pairing ideas, you know, whatever? And so we'll hone it down even more, and then we'll come up with a shot list, and we'll say, okay, so now we want to create X, Y, and Z. And I'll create like a Pinterest board that sort of gives the vibes that we're after. You know, I'm mm-hmm. like, okay, so if this winery is, you know, what I always ask them, if they don't have a brand kit, I'll kind of guide them into what I'm looking for, what I need to properly do my job. I'm like, okay, what's your brand voice? Are you a little bit more serious? Are you sarcastic? Are you a little bit more playful? Are you friendly, endearing? Like, what are those qualities? And so they'll tell me that, and I'll create an inspiration board that reflects that. And they can add to it as well if they've seen any sort of inspiration type shots that they're like, we would love to sort of create this in a way that makes sense for our brand. They'll put that in there. And so then we have our shot list, we have our inspiration board, and then it's shoot day. And I always have a lot of fun on my shoots. I try not to take it too seriously. I know that there are some photographers who will go out and they are just very like straight faced, and there's nothing wrong with that, but it's, I, you know, for me, if it's not fun, it's not worth doing. So I'm like, I know I'm going to go have fun with my clients and tease my clients, and we're going to have a bunch of fun. It's going to be great. And yeah, so we get our shots done, and I edit I have like a specific style. So I try and keep things as true to how I remember it as possible. But like elevate it a little bit. So maybe a little bit more vibrant if that's what the brand is after. Like if the brand is a little bit more fun and exciting and, you know, young and hip, whatever, our colors are going to be a lot more bright and vibrant. And, you know, the light is going to be a little bit more intense and loud, you know, like we'll use harsh light in that kind of situation. If the brand is a little bit more serious and kind of moody and sarcastic, we'll set ourselves up in sort of a darker area, and we'll soften the light a little bit, and we'll make it a little bit more dark and mysterious. And yeah. And so we'll do that. And so it all depends on the brand, you know, like you can tell a photo has been captured by me because I have a general style that I stick with, but I work towards what the brand's attitude is, what their mood is, what they're after, their personality.
There are two ways to bring home more money with your photography business. You either get more clients or you spend less of the money that you make. CloudSpot Studio helps you keep more of what you earn. With the lowest payment processing fees in the industry, the average photographer will save $300 annually. And that's just more money to invest in essential gear like a new flash or a sweet camera bag. You know, one that is perfect for storing all of the wedding day snacks that you can pack. But it's not just about savings. CloudSpot Studio is designed to streamline your workflow. Easily organize shoots, send contracts, questionnaires, invoices, and you're really going to enjoy the hassle-free payments. So sign up for a free CloudSpot account at deliverphotos.com. And as a bonus, you're going to get access to my exclusive wedding and portrait contracts and questionnaires at no additional cost. Why let fees chip away at your profits? Empower your photo journey with CloudSpot and watch your business soar. Well, you already pre-answered my next question, which is, if a winery said that their brand voice is more sarcastic than it is playful, mm-hmm. how does that dictate, you know, the images that you shoot? But I think, as you just mentioned there, you don't change who you are as a photographer. It's just the mm-hmm. elements that you use to photograph, which would change yeah. in this case, lighting and, you know, different specific backgrounds and whatnot. So that makes a lot of sense. So
yeah.
you have this consultation with the winery, you mm-hmm. came up with a shot list and you go yeah. out there, mm-hmm. but you also said that you like to have fun. So I want to know, you know, what is the split, but how close to you are shooting the photos on your shot list versus being open and reactionary to whatever's happening in front of you?
Yeah. It's both. So the shot list is more of a guide, you know, it's not really like we don't stick to it too closely. A question I like to ask my clients when we start, especially just to sort of like kick off the shot list, is like, if something terrible, like I'm like, I always preface it, I'm like, nothing terrible is going to happen. I was like, but if something terrible were to happen and I were to lose every single photo except five, what five would you hope were saved? And that sort of helps to focus their mind a little bit and be like, okay, these are the priorities. So we have to get this, we have to get this, we have to get this, whatever. And then anything beyond that is just whatever comes to us in the moment, because the shot list may shift or change based off of, you know, if we have models available or if, you know, if we're working with the winemaker, it's that shot list is going to be dictated by what they're up to in the winery. Right. And so like, you know, the person I'm talking to, if it's a creative director or if it's the winemaker themselves, sometimes it's super tiny wineries and the winemaker is wearing all the hats. You know, they'll come to me and they'll be like, hey, I want to make sure that we capture, for example, me pulling a barrel sample. I'm like, great, we can do that at any time of the year. We don't have to wait for a specific time of year. But if they're like, hey, we need to capture, like, I want to capture us like doing winemaking, like making wine. I'm like, okay, well, we're going to have to wait for a certain time of year. We're going to have to wait for harvest to capture that. And so when we get into harvest, it's sort of like every man for himself. And during harvest, it's chaos. And sometimes the shot list that you had in your head is going to have to change a little bit because of situations, you know, I'll take one client that I had last harvest, for example. We wanted to capture night harvest photos. And so we wanted to capture the grapes actually being picked off the vine, which typically happens when it's dark, because it's cooler. You want to harvest your grapes when it's cool, because otherwise you're going to have elevated sugars or falsely elevated sugars in your grapes. And so mm-hmm. it just, and it's also has to do with the amount of energy it takes to cool those grapes back down. Cause you want to always have, you want to start with cold grapes, cold juice, so that you can control the fermentation a little bit. If it's too warm, the fermentation can kick off at the wrong time.
Yes.
It could maybe not complete fermentation. There's all kinds of stuff that goes with it. So anyway, so we're harvesting, they're like, we want to capture the grapes actually being picked. And I've learned from experience that you really only need like 30 minutes of picking like night harvest photos before they all start looking exactly the same. And so I communicated that. I was like, listen, this, get me out there at 5:30 when it's still dark so we can capture the grapes being picked. And, but then we can also capture the sunrise in the vineyard. And so we can do that kind of thing. And then I can follow the grapes to the winery and we can capture sort of all of your other stuff. What happened on this day was the vineyard crews were so awesome and they finished so quickly. And they had, of course the vineyard crews, they didn't know that a photographer was going to be coming. Sure. And so they weren't like sitting around twiddling their thumbs waiting for me. They're like, no, we're going to get in, we're going to get out, and we're going to go back home and go to sleep and rest because we've been working super hard. So, and so when I showed up, the vineyard was complete. It was silent in the way that only vineyards that have no grapes left are silent. and so I, you know, I called up my client. I was like, I think they finished picking, and they're like, ah, shucks, you know, like, dang it, we missed them. And they're like, that's okay. Just like come down to the winery and we'll just, you know, like when the sun comes up, we'll get some like nice landscape photos of the sun rising over the vineyard, which is always beautiful, grapes or no grapes.
Yes.
And then we can capture like the processing of the grapes. And I was like, great. You know, so I went and like took a nap in my car for, you know, an hour and then like got up and got the sunrise and then went and down and captured those. So that was an example of a situation where the shot list that we had in mind, which were these epic night harvest photos with like the light from the tractor shining down on these grapes and these amazing vineyard workers picking and as fast as they can and all this stuff. So all of that, we weren't able to capture that last year. And so they were like, hey, that's fine. We'll bring you back out next year. We'll get it, you know, and we'll get you a little bit earlier. Cause this was sort of a last minute photo shoot that happened. And which happens occasionally. Yeah. And so, yeah. So now we have a plan for next year, which is great. But yeah, it was kind of an example of, you just have to be as flexible as you possibly can. You can't, especially in something like wine, like there, you know, my lifestyle sessions, we can follow the shot list pretty closely, but anything beyond that, I'm like, no, we're going to capture what's really happening. And we'll have a guiding list in our brain to sort of be like, okay, we really want to make sure we capture this. But really a lot of the times the shot list is more feeling versus specific shots. So we want to convey this feeling, or we want to make sure that we're capturing our winemaker in their element. And I was like, well, what does that mean? That can mean anything, right? And so my job is to come on site and just watch them. And so a lot of times, you know, I've been in this industry for over 10 years now. And I've worked most of that time in Santa Barbara wine country. And it's a very close knit community, kind of going back to that, where I didn't like the competition, but I loved the community. The wine industry it's a very close knit community. Everybody helps everybody. And so everybody also knows everybody, which can be a little bit incestuous sometimes. It's like, we sort of know everybody. If you don't know someone, you know of them. And so I often know my clients before I've photographed them, or I know them by reputation. So it's a pretty quick process of me like watching them and being like, okay, this is who you are when you're working. Great. Now we're going to capture that. Sometimes it's somebody brand new who I've never worked with a day in my life before. And so, or I've never like heard of their wine or whatever, or maybe they're a new winemaker. And so what I'll do is I'll go out and I'll taste their wine first. Or I'll just do as much internet research as I can. And then I like to show up a good 30 minutes before the shoot is due to start. And so I'll just observe and see who they are. And I find that that also helps kind of calm people down, because these are not people who are comfortable being photographed. You know, they're very modest people for the most part. And so it's just getting them used to the idea of me being there.
I get that. And that's gotta be great, you know, with it being such a close community, being able to essentially kind of already go in with a game plan before making anything official, right? Because that makes it look like you're a whole lot more efficient, of course, in your photography and the photos that you capture. So from a business perspective, is what you do, is this like a, are you like on a retainer? Is this like a contract thing? Is this like a season thing? I'll shoot your winery for a season, or is this, you know, you want me to come back out and photograph grapes, I'll come out and then that's it, the end. How does that work?
Yeah. In the early days, it was a lot of kind of one and done sessions because I hadn't quite learned how to communicate effectively what I was offering and how I could be beneficial to them. But now these days, it's very much retainer work. So I have a couple different packages. I do have like single campaign packages, which people are welcome to do. So I have like I have a 1 hour session, and then I have a 3 hour session that are one off. And then I have what I call my magnum session, which is essentially a retainer. I call it a punch card. So they pay for three hour sessions, and they get a good rate, you know. So my standard, what I call my standard session, which is a single one-off 3 hour session, is $1,000. And then right now that's going up. It's $1,000 right now. But my magnum session it works out to about $750 per session. But they pay for that all at once. And then they can use that all, you know, 3 months in a row. They could use that all one day if they wanted to. I had one client that was like, we're going to knock this out. We're going to do this all in one day. Yeah. And so I was like, you got it. Like, this is how much it costs, you know? And then some people can do it like seasonally. So I have one client, who I just wrapped up a whole year of, capturing them last week. So they paid for 5 sessions total. And at that discounted rate, and we did a session in, it was like April or something of last year. And then we did another one in June, and then another one in August, and another one in, October. And then we did another one, just last week. Mm-hmm. We really captured all part every season of winemaking and vineyard work. And they're like, they just called me up and they're like, we're going to do this again. We really love that. And okay. I was like, great.
Yes.
I love that idea. So most of my clients these days choose the magnum package, the punch card method. And we talk through it. I'm like, okay, so what are you hoping to accomplish? Okay. You want to do some lifestyle. You want to do a lifestyle session. You want to use one of the sessions to show like in the winery, and then you want to have one session that's out in the vineyard. Okay. Well, the vineyard session should be done in June or July, because that's when all the foliage looks, it's beautiful. It's lush. Like, you know, you're starting to get some grapes, but they're smaller right now. But so all the energy is going into photosynthesizing right now. And so the canopy looks amazing. So you want these like landscape shots in the vineyard. That's what we want to capture. And then, you know, okay, you want some winery shots. So your best option for that is in the middle of harvest, because that's when we can get a nice wide variety of what's going on in the winery. And then lifestyle shots, whenever. That doesn't really, it doesn't really matter. Like, we can do that whenever you want. And it's typically right now, since everything's pretty quiet in the vineyard, we typically do our lifestyle type sessions, from like January to March ish. So yeah, a little bit of both.
And I think that broke it down perfectly, obviously, with a business like this, where the end product does take such a long time to produce. I think that's got to be the best way to do it, especially when you're working for another business. You know, things change. Mm-hmm. They want some updated photos. I love that.
Yeah.
I want to know, when it comes to these 3 hour sessions that you're doing, regardless of what it is, lifestyle, you know, being out in the field, harvest, you know, whatever it is, if you had to guess, how many images would you say that you take during each session? And then how many images are actually delivered?
Yeah. So, okay, this is hysterical. So when I first started this business, I didn't charge by my time. I didn't charge by the hour. I actually charged, my packages were set up by image delivery.
Oh.
So, you know, my smallest package was 10 images. My medium package was 25 images. And then my big package was 75 images. And what I found was I'm an under promiser, over deliverer.
Of course.
Big time. Yeah. I see no point. Like if I took a bunch, like if I took 50 awesome photos in a session that we were supposed to capture 10, I see no point in not delivering those photos. And there were some times where I'm hearing like some other photographers being like, that's a terrible way to run your business. You should be making money off of those. I'm like, no, like this works for me. I love these people. They should have these images. What am I going to do with them? Right. Anyways. And so what I found was there were some sessions, like for example, a night harvest photo session that somebody would pay me 3 hours to be there. And I'm like, after 30 minutes, these photos look exactly the same. And so I'm supposed to capture, it wasn't a 3 hour session. I was supposed to capture 25 images. Right. And I would be there for
15
hours.
Minutes.
Oh yeah. No, I would be there for hours because I'm like, this is taking, it's so hard to find like so many different ways to capture 25 unique images. So I would be there for, yeah, I'd be there for like 3, 4, 5 hours. And I'm like, I'm losing out of money on this. But then I had some sessions like in the cellar where during in the middle of harvest where they paid for an hour or not an hour, they paid for 10 images, right? They're like, we need 10 unique images. I would be there for like half an hour and I would capture 10 unique images. And then I'd be like, I'm done.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I guess I'll leave. I don't know. And I'm like, no, this is, you know, this isn't fair to them. Like they, sure. You know, like I should be, I don't know. And so it just felt like there were some days where some sessions I was losing money because mm-hmm. I was like having to be there for so long just to capture the minimum required images. Right. And then there were some places that I would end up capturing so many images that it was hard to narrow them down. Right. And so I was like, okay, how can I make this better for both myself and my client? I was like, we're going to set these packages up by time and I will promise a minimum amount of images in that time, but I will 1000% deliver way more.
Of course.
And so, so I would say for my 1 hour sessions, again, depending on the session, I promise 15 images. I consistently deliver probably about like 30 to 40 images in that time, sometimes more, especially if it's in the middle of like production harvest, I will deliver just like 50, 60 images, no problem in an hour. And they're unique images too. Like it's bonkers. And then with my 3 hour sessions, I typically promise about 40 images. But again, especially in during those like big sessions, I will end up delivering a lot more. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I think really what I'm just trying to figure out here is because you know, at a wedding I go and I will just shoot all day and I will come back with thousands of images and you know, you deliver only a fraction of that. Right. I want to know what elements are you looking for in an image to like during that culling process to determine whether or not that's going to be a photo that you're going to deliver.
Totally. Yeah. So, I'm trying to be a lot more intentional about my photos these days. Again, in the early days, I think like a lot of people, I would take the same image like five times and I go in like, and I go into Cole and I'm like, these are exactly the same. Which one do I choose? So I like bring my husband and I'm like, which babe, one? Which one? And he's like, they're exactly the same. I'm like, they're not though. And he's like, no, they are. So I'm trying to be more intentional now about my images, which I think is just a sign of like maturing as a photographer. Right. But, what I'm looking for is one, is the lighting right? The challenge with what I do is I'm often swapping between going from a vineyard to, I mean, we'll talking about that one day that I was out in the vineyard or out there all day photographing. I started, it was night photography, night harvest, sunrise, you know, under, like, still outside, but in the shade. And then in the cellar, which is really dark and the lighting's weird, you know, and then going into the tasting room from there and then into the tasting room courtyard. So I'm like moving in a bunch of different lighting scenarios. And so usually those, like, you can tell those transitionary photos in between each location, they're really awkward and weird because it's me trying to dial in, you know, the Kelvin right and really get everything right so that it looks as close to what I remember as possible in camera. And so I typically, those first few images, I typically throw them away, or, you know, I don't throw them away, but like I'll cull them. I keep all of my images, even the ones that I cull, even the like really blurry ones. Cause I'm like, I don't know, maybe that'll be a style that I can go back and mess around with, you know, and learn from. But anyway, so those are typically the ones that I'll cull, and then I'll put them in. I do like three separate culling processes. So I'll do my initial cull through like Photo Mechanic, just do a quick, like, that's blurry, that's blurry, that's blurry, that's blurry. And then what I culled, I'll do a second cull. So I'll be like, clearly I couldn't decide when I was doing my quick cull, I couldn't decide between two identical photos. And so then I'll stare at them for like a minute and I'm like, okay, which one looks better? Like, which one, if I'm going to have to, like, you know, maybe is the horizon more level on this one? I don't know, which one's telling a better story. And then I'll do that second cull. And then once I get it into Lightroom, I'll start doing my edits. And as I'm editing, I'll notice some photos that I'm like, this isn't quite, or like, I've already told this story. Like, this photo, I feel like I already edited like this same similar type of photo, similar story that I'm trying to tell with this image like 10 photos ago. And so I'll like kind of choose between those two images. And then, I'll go through and edit a little bit more. And then once I'll put them up in the gallery to deliver the images, and I'll do like one final walkthrough where I'm like, is this really necessary? Do they really need this image? Is this going to make it, you know, am I overwhelming them with options? So the things that I'm looking for, is the lighting okay? Is it, you know, does it make sense for the brand? Some brands, you know, that are a little bit more serious, they don't like cheersing photos.
Sure.
And so like, if for some reason a cheer is sort of like snuck in there, I'm like, oh, they don't need that, so I'll cut that out. Right. As well as like, is this image going to serve their business? Is this going to get them an ROI? Right. As a wedding photographer, as family photographers, the goal is to make memories, but for essentially a brand photographer, our goal is to get our customers a return on their investment, our clients a return on their investment. And so I'm looking at those images through the lens of marketing at that point as well, being like, is this image going to serve that purpose? Is this image going to help them sell their wine? And if the answer is no, then I'm like, okay, so it's not going to help them sell their wine, but is it going to endear them to their audience? And if the answer to that question is no, then I'm like, okay, is this unique to this brand? And if that question is no, then I finally throw it out, right? So I'm asking myself all these questions throughout the multiple culling processes, throughout the editing process, throughout the photographing process, right? Like I'm trying to look at scenes and be like, is this going to serve my client in all these different aspects? And if the answer is no, then it either doesn't get captured, or if it gets captured just in case, it usually gets cold. So
that is an exhausting decision tree that you have to go through for every single photo. My goodness.
Yeah.
But, you know, obviously at the end of the day, your clients love the photos. You know, if they're going to want to re-up and then say, let's do it again next year, that's got to be a testament to what it is that you provide for them. So it's obviously working. It's obviously working. Heather, I know that we are at the end of our time here. And I feel like we could keep talking much longer, because really, really, this is a world that I don't know much about, but I find it absolutely fascinating. So we'll have to do this again. But until then, I know that there's listeners right now who are thinking, I got to see what Heather's talking about. I got to see some of her work. Can you share where listeners can find you and follow your work online?
Yes, I am on Instagram. That's where I spend the most of my time, at Craft and Cluster. You can check out some of my work on my website at craftandcluster.com. I mean, I'm on all social media platforms at Craft and Cluster. You can find me just about anywhere. I typically just spend the most time on Instagram. And I am going to be working on, this maybe doesn't quite apply to your audience, but I am working on creating a membership program for wine brands to learn how to market their wine on Instagram. But I feel like everything that I teach is transferable to any industry. So if one of your listeners is having trouble with marketing themselves on Instagram, they're welcome to join this membership program. And we're going to walk through how every possible thing that you would need to know about how to market on Instagram. And that is, you can sign up for the wait list for that. It's not quite live yet, but you can sign up for the wait list for that at craftandcluster.com/course.
Once again, just a big thanks to Heather for coming on the podcast and sharing everything that she did. I got three big takeaways that I want to share with you. The first one is to find your niche. You know, niche is one of those words that puts new photographers a bit on edge. I get it. On one hand, you want to shoot everything that you see. But on the other hand, you want to gain traction and become a successful photographer who's known for something, you know. But hearing how Heather took her two loves and focused them into making it one thing that is the best that it can be is awesome. You know, when you do it for joy rather than traction or success, then you're going to find it much easier to dive deeper into making truly unique images. And that is how you stand out. Takeaway number two is the power of visual storytelling. Photography is more than just a photo of a plant, a barrel of grapes, a glass of liquid. You know, it's desire, it's joy, it's craft, it's purpose. And these are not tangible things that you can just, you know, check off a list and make sure that you got them before you take the photo. They take intention, you know, knowing what you want to say, making a plan, and then going after those images. And takeaway number three, always over-deliver. You know, anybody who buys images, they're not buying the paper. They're buying the service. You know, when you work directly with a person whom you're photographing or whom will receive your images, you are in control of the service that you are selling. But you're dealing with people. And people like to work with people, and we do extra things for people that we like. So when you over-deliver, you're telling the person you like them, which makes it more likely that you're going to work with them again and that they will want to re-work with you. I want to invite you to share your biggest takeaway in the free and private Beginner Photography Podcast community, where you can connect with others along with share your ideas and ask questions. So come join us over at beginnerphotopod.com/group. Again, that's beginnerphotopod.com/group. That is it. Until next week, remember, the more that you shoot today, the better of a photographer you will be tomorrow. Talk soon.
Thank you for listening to the Beginner Photography Podcast. Keep shooting, and we'll see you next week.